depression truly is on the increase, especially among adolescents.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Depression is an increasingly common mental diagnosis in America today. Perhaps more concerning is that a growing number of adolescents, particularly young women, are being clinically diagnosed as suffering from some major form of depression. Today, we're joined by Dr. Jane Anderson, a clinical professor of pediatrics at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Anderson recently retired as a practicing pediatrician after 33 years. She's a board member of Medical Servants International, the National Physician Center, and the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Anderson, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Thank you so much, Mr. Rustin, for having me.
Dr. Anderson, adolescent depression is certainly not new, but the growing extent to which we see it in American society today is. In a general sense, to what do you attribute the increase of depression we're seeing among adolescents and teens in our country?
Well, it certainly is increasing. At first, people thought maybe we were just making the diagnosis more effectively, but I think that's clearly been proven not to be the case, that depression truly is on the increase, especially among adolescents. I think a lot of it has to do with our culture and society. It's obviously not the only cause, but I think a lot of the lifestyles that are prevalent today, a lot of use of social media, use of a lot of computer time, screen time, decreased sleep, decreased outdoor activity, as well as really the lack of meaning for a lot of the teens don't have meaning for their lives. They don't know what they're here for. Mm-hmm. And so I think that all plays a role, as do many other things, such as there are biochemical influences. I think nutrition plays a huge role. There's a relationship between processed foods and an increased risk of depression. So I think it's a lot of what we typically call our normal society in America.
Right. Well, we know that risk factors for teen depression include physical, emotional, psychological, and environmental factors. In your practice and in your experience, do these factors affect young men and young women differently? And if so, in what ways?
Oh, I think they do. This may sound very politically incorrect. I apologize. But young women are tuned and were created to be in relationship. And they look for love, and they are often therefore become sexually active as they're looking for love and relationships. And when those relationships break up, it can lead to depression. So I think not all, but some of the increased risk for women is related to their how they were designed to be in relationship and the heartbreak of broken relationships. Part of it is probably also related to hormonal influence. And I don't think we understand all the impact of hormones on our bodies, but there are estrogen receptors and testosterone receptors in the brain. And again, what role they have, we're just beginning to learn. But different areas of the brain do grow differently and function differently in women. And maybe this estrogen, you know, influence also has a role in increased risk of depression for young women. So I think there are many factors that lead to young women being at a slightly greater increased risk than the young men.
So what are some possible warning signs, Dr. Anderson, of childhood depression that parents should be on the lookout for?
Well, this will sound overwhelming to people, and I don't want it to be, because it will sound like, in one sense, it'll be, oh, well, normal teenagers do that. They feel sad at times. They feel hopeless at times. They might be irritable or moody at times. That's all sort of normal teenage behavior. So what we're looking for is more a pattern that this is pervasive feelings of sadness or guilt or hopelessness. And I think that's often manifest in behaviors that the parents can notice, like changes in teenagers' sleep. They're sleeping too much, they're not sleeping at all. Or changes in their appetite, they're not eating, or they're eating too much. Or especially if they start isolating themselves and things that they used to find so interesting, and they were, you know, out there in society participating in sports or drama or, you know, clubs after school. If they start withdrawing from activities and don't find things pleasurable that they used to. To me, that's one of the biggest warning signs. And then, you know, changes in school performance and absences from school. And then, of course, the things that are really, you know, blatant, drug use, alcohol use, or if they say they're thinking of, you know, hurting themselves. Parents should never, ever, ever ignore a statement that says, I'm, you know, planning to hurt myself or I'm considering it. That is never to be ignored.
Well, and there's no doubt that the environment in the home can be a significant factor in the likelihood that a young person may experience childhood depression. What role does the relationship, for example, between a child's parents in the home have with respect to the potential for a child to experience depression?
Oh, that is just a fascinating question, and it's really a pivotal question. Because there are many different ways a parent's relationship with each other and then also the parent relationship with the child can impact that child's emotional and mental well-being. So let's do the risk factors first, would be that a parent who has experienced their own depression places their child at an increased risk for depression. So if a parent knows they have had depression or they're suffering with it themselves, one, please get help, and two, then be more alert for signs in the teenager. It doesn't mean the teenager is doomed and they're definitely going to be depressed, but it does place them at increased risk, so parents should be aware and paying attention to that. Secondly, there's a whole new area of research, and maybe you've discussed it on your programs in the past, called the adverse childhood events data, which shows that children who have experienced adverse or negative effects during their childhood will have long-term poorer medical well-being as well as emotional and physical and mental well-being in the future. And so a child who's experienced physical abuse or sexual abuse or parental divorce is included in that.
Sure.
Other forms of neglect will have increased risk for depression as a teenager and later in life. So we'd like to encourage all parents to make sure they are maintaining a good, healthy relationship between themselves. And then the parent-child bond is crucial. One of the first studies that was one of the largest studies was done, started in 1994, and it was called the National Longitudinal Study on Adolescent Health, and it's often referred to now as the AD Health Study. They followed over 40,000 adolescents through their high school years very carefully, and they're still following them as adults decades later. And one of the first things they found is that the teenagers who navigate their teenage years with the most healthy behaviors and participating in many less or not participating at all in any high-risk behaviors, the teenagers who navigated their teenage years most successfully were those teens who were well-connected and bonded to their parents. So one of the best things we can be having parents do is start as young as 2 and 3 and make sure you are connecting with your kids. And you can do that in so many different ways. Family meals are a crucial part of staying connected. The more meals families eat together with their children, less likely the child is to have depression, less likely the child is to participate in other high-risk behaviors during their teen years, and they do better academically as a bonus. So chores actually have been shown to be beneficial. Parents might be pleased to hear that. All sorts of things. I like to emphasize volunteering. Families who volunteer together bond together, but they're also teaching their children and their teenagers, your life has meaning. Here you are serving another human being in whatever way you're volunteering. It's a great way to promote the parent-child bond as well as help the teen know that they have a meaning in their life.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
What, Dr. Anderson, should parents do if they do suspect that their child may be suffering from depression? And at what point do you believe that professional intervention may be appropriate and or necessary?
Oh, so I would say at the first suspicion, earlier, sooner rather than later. At any point that a parent is even concerned or questioning, might my child be depressed? First thing you could do is, if you feel comfortable, talk to your child, talk to your teenager. Set aside a special time, take them out on a date and say, I'm concerned about you. These are the things I've noticed. Am I misinterpreting things? What's going on? And just have a time of talking to them. If the parent doesn't feel they can do that, the next step is always to seek help. And it could, you know, I'm biased. I'm a pediatrician. We're, you know, trained to sort of help people navigate the system and access resources. So talk to your pediatrician, call your pediatrician, make an appointment. Most pediatricians would be glad to see you with or without your teenager if you want to just come in for a consultation without your teen and just talk. Or, you know, if you feel comfortable bringing your teenage with you. So I would say seek help. There are also national phone lines that you can call. They're designed for teenagers, but the parents can call for, you know, increased information. So I would say always, sooner rather than later, seek help.
Right. Well, absolutely. And Dr. Anderson, from your experience, do you find that adolescents and teens who suffer from depression in their younger years potentially carry that depression into their adult years? Or is this something that they can have success over? In any event, is this is depression kind of an ongoing concern that they need to be aware of? Or is do you believe there's a cure?
Well, I think how I'd phrase it is to say, having had depression during adolescent years places that teen at increased risk for having a recurrence later on in life. But the earlier it's treated, we know is better, and we can actually change patterns of thinking. So one of the ideas that people have about how people become depressed is that it's their negative way of talking back to themselves and what they feed back to themselves. I'm worthless. I'm meaningless. My life doesn't have anything, you know, good to offer to anybody. And if you can change that cycle of feedback that they're providing themselves early in life, and one of the ways psychologists talk about is cognitive behavioral therapy. But if you can change how people talk to themselves, then that is a skill that they can carry for the rest of their lives. And so that if they see something happening, they've had a bad experience, something traumatic has happened in their life, they've got a skill that they can fall back on. So they are at risk for, you know, depression later on, but we want to teach them skills early on that will help them through those bad times.
Now, Dr. Anderson, I know that you're very passionate about, as you've discussed, about preventative methods to avoid adolescent depression in the first place. And a lot of that has to do with an environment in the home that really fosters positive development and shields children from many of those risk factors that we've discussed. Where can our listeners go to learn more about the risks, the signs, and also the preventions for adolescent depression?
Well, the American College of Pediatricians has several papers up and information, and they also have a blog, and they're available at www.bestforchildren.org. That's one way to access them. And you'll find there, especially the paper on decreasing the risk of teen depression, and we list things like decreasing screen time and social media time and increasing healthy nutrition and encouraging exercise and outdoor activities and good sleep. And then, by the way, keeping a gratitude journal. So, you know, the Bible tells us in everything give thanks. It's good advice. People who keep a gratitude journal actually have better mental health. And then encouraging volunteering and encouraging sexual abstinence. Kids who are sexually active are more likely to become depressed, both male and female. So American College of Pediatricians, and then I'm sure you've had lots of other organizations on that have good information focused on the family life today. They have great information. And then if people need to know the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, that is 1-800-273-8255.
Well, Dr. Jane Anderson, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters today and for your just great work and great advice on this very important subject. And we look for the opportunity to have you on the show again in the future.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.